And this episode of The Running Public is brought to you by us and the Running Public Training Plan.
This running plan has everything we ever talk about on any Training Tuesday. It all is in there. Speed work, threshold, hill work, up, down, long run, long qualities. Everything we talk about is just waiting for you.
That's right. The hardest part about creating your own training schedule is deciding what to do the next day or that day. We take care of that for you, which I think is worth the $19.99 a month in itself. It's cheap, right? And you can cancel at any time. If you've been curious about it or you don't know how to put together all the knowledge we share on the podcast into your own training plan, it's a no-brainer. Where can people go find this this training plan and get signed up, Bracken?
On our beautiful website, therunningpublic.com. $19.99 a month. Cancel anytime you want.
You're listening to The Running Public.
From marathoners to mud runners, we all have the same goal. Get to the finish line faster.
That's right. This podcast is for you guys, The Running Public. All right, I'm noticing a theme with you and your screen names as of late, Bracken. Your username.
Not
that
super
you,
creative.
Well, no, they're not very creative lately, but as you know, we type in our names every time we record, and we usually make them different. Today I'm what? K Money? K with a money sign? Figured that was simple. Yours is Sore. That's all it says. And the last time we recorded, I think it was some version of that, and then maybe 2 weeks before that, it was some version of that. And I'm just trying to figure out what you're doing to yourself over there.
This one is not a typical sore.
Okay.
This is, I got back to German volume training last week. I did an easy lift, an easy strength, basically. 2x5 on every single major lift you can do after high rocks. That's one of my active recovery days. Like 50 to 60% of max weight, 2 sets of 5. It's really easy, but it takes you through full range of motion. Makes you tense up a little bit. I don't know. I just feel good afterwards. Gives me all the benefits of a lift with none of the drawbacks of a workout. It's like weighted yoga. So I did that afterwards. And then 4 days after, I got into German volume training again. So I did my first day back of German volume training. And then we got 10 inches of snow that night. And it was heavy, wet snow, and it drifted. And so I shoveled 3 times that. I shoveled that afternoon, shoveled that night, and then shoveled again the next morning. And the combination of the two just rocked. My trunk is really sore. My arms aren't sore. My legs aren't sore. But from my waistline to my shoulder blades is just, I'm like wearing a flak jacket of soreness.
You're one of those that I shake my head at. And finally, you guys got snow and we didn't for a change. It's about time.
Yeah.
But all you idiots out there shoveling when it's still snowing out and knowing more's coming and then making one job into two or 2 jobs into 3. I let it all pile up. I let all my neighbors clean their shit up 3 times and then I wait till it's all done. Even if I drive over it a couple times on the driveway, I'm okay with that. And then I shovel it. So you dug your own grave here, in my opinion, Bracken.
You know, I had a conversation with my daughter about that this weekend.
Did you? All right.
I don't know why you're shoveling. It's still snowing. So here's the deal. If it's going to snow 10 inches, I can shovel 4, 3, and 3, or I can shovel all 10.
Or you could buy a snow blower.
But all 10, you're going to be getting like 6 inches of clearance at a time. Every shovelful is full and you get no progress. It might take the same amount of time, but that one is going to be terrible. Plus, if you get any undermelt underneath it at all, and then it freezes, you have this layer of frozen, icy snow. It's impossible to get through. And then that adds a whole nother thing. You're either chopping it or you're just icing it and waiting for it to melt. So it just, I never liked the idea of doing multiple, but I was kind of forced into it by the fact that we're in a city now and our sidewalk leads to City Hall. It's the same sidewalk the City Hall sits on. So we have foot traffic all day long. So we have to clear it.
Take care of the sidewalk. Leave the driveway for later. But you must not have a snowblower. I have a snowblower and it's wonderful for those situations.
Had one for a while.
Yeah. I even made a snow blowing path in my backyard on the lakeside of my house so I can throw my spear. I ran the snowblower all the way through the backyard over the grass and I made this nice alleyway so I can hang my spear target on the tree without being impeded by snow. haven't thrown it once yet, but those are details. But I'm ready to at any moment.
You could if you wanted to.
Yes, I could, and that's what matters.
Better to have it and not need it.
Well, we were talking about something interesting here, actually, and I want to ask you a couple follow-up questions about it. We were talking before we started to record, and I said I'm still entertaining racing this weekend, potentially, depending on how far ahead I get on work, because I have a trip coming up, so I can't really go race if I can't get ahead on work. Anyways, and Bracken said, I'm not going to race. I don't want it yet. Like, he called it his refractory racing period, is large.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell me more about that? So we have people who like race and they can't wait to get out there again the next weekend and race, or they're just chomping at the bit. And then there's others who race, it takes a bit out of them, or they want to go back to the lab and then race again, you know, 4, 6, 8 weeks later. And I feel like back in the day you raced every weekend when you were trying to make a living off of this. And now that's changed. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious as to why or how.
I don't really know the why. I have some theories for it. The easy theory is that I'm an all-in or all-out kind of person when it comes to competition. I like mm-hmm. to get obsessive about things. And I've talked about this on here recently a little bit, but I've made a promise not to get obsessive about this. It's not good for me. It's not good for my marriage. It's not good for me as a father. It's probably not going to be good for my business, because the extra time I have on my hands, which is always not a ton, would go towards my selfish endeavors rather than doing the things that need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And one race will turn to two, two will turn to 10, 10 will turn to buying a pass and going in. And then the races start to mean more and matter more. And then they affect me negatively if they don't go well. I can't make a living off racing if I wanted to. There is no six-figure race contract waiting for me. There's no five-figure prize money waiting for me at any of these races. That's just not a reality for me anymore. So if mm-hmm. the juice is not worth the squeeze, I just can't be squeezing that often. So that's theory number one.
It's real tough to make a living. If you're going to try to make a living these days in our space off of placement prize money, it's non-existent now. You cannot make a living in this sport, I don't think, based solely on prize money. It has to come from sponsorships or secondary endorsements. And now, like, racing every weekend, you can only find one paid race every month or two now versus you could find them every weekend before. So that tracks.
Yeah, and I'm just flat out not good enough to be the person that goes first, second, or third at that race, that one race every month. I'm not that person. I can't do that. So then you have to be real good on social. And if I had to make a list of my strengths and skill sets in this world, that wouldn't make the list.
It wouldn't make the list I'd make for you either.
it's not something I'm allowed to go all in on, because there's no real benefit from it. It's awesome to be at races. Yes. It probably helps us in our business to do well at races, even though it shouldn't matter whether we're good or not at running in order to coach people to do it. It lends some credence to it because we're practicing what we preach, but that can be done on, well, in the last 3 years, two races. So anything above that is already better. So the other thing is that I find that as kind of my whole life, it takes a lot out of me to race hard.
The racing or the traveling or the whole deal?
The racing. I like
the
traveling.
Race itself.
Mm-hmm. The race itself. I think everyone wants to glorify how tough they are at races, but I always come to races and feel like I'm not the most talented or in the greatest of fitness. And so I just have to really sell out to do well at things. That'll sound like I'm beating my own chest or whatever, but that's just the way it hits me as an athlete. And so then that's my reality. But I am drained mentally after races of like my toughness meter is down. I find it very difficult to even comprehend doing it again the next weekend.
It's got to charge back up.
You know, the people we've interviewed who race over and over and over, yeah, racing fills their meter up. Mine depletes my meter. Even in a race like this, High Rocks Doubles, where it wasn't necessarily the toughest thing I ever had to do, it just got hard at some point, and it was painful, and I had to dig in. I didn't want to do that again right afterwards, and I still don't. So it's part of the reason I was telling you where I think I like jumping into races, because then I don't have to think about getting back up for a soul-crushing effort. But then when the opportunity presents itself, it's like, oh, that'd be fun. And then it's exciting. And then I look forward to it. But I rarely sign up for a race right after a race. It just doesn't. The race fills my cup, and then there's no more room, it feels like. I'm excited to go back to training. I can get back to being tough in training. Like, I did a big workout this weekend. It was fun. I looked forward to it. But I don't view a competition in the same way. I guess I don't have a real reason for it, but that's just the way it hits me.
Mm-hmm. I can follow that. And I understand that, especially big races. Like, I think we only have so many shots to shoot in a year, like big shots to shoot. Let's say if we look at our season, like where you really go to the well, where you put out, where you access another level of push or suck. You can't repeat that. You can't go out and be that version of yourself too often because you run out of matches or shots to shoot or bullets or whatever it is. And you need to charge those back up. It's like earning sick days, right, at work. You got to work so many hours before you get one sick day. And that sick day is your day to go hammer. And some people earn sick days faster than others, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's been a weakness of my own training is that I'm rarely the most prepared person at a race. Maybe like two or three times in my life have I come in and thought, I've outworked everyone in this gym. There's a lot of people in the sport who always hashtag hardest worker in the room.
Yeah.
And there's only been like, I don't know, in my 25 years of running, there's probably been like 13 total months where I felt like I was the hardest worker in the room. All the other times I always thought, I'm going to get the most out of my work in the room, but I know I didn't put in the most work. And so I've very rarely had a finish line in my life where I feel like I'm capable of living at the finish line. Mm-hmm. I generally run out of fitness before the line gets there, and I'm just surviving through. And so I get to the end of these things, and it's my own doing. You come in with 7/10 of your fitness, and, well, you're going to come up short, and it's going to be miserable. And that's the majority of the races I do. So I'm not that person who at the finish line who looks great and is like, yeah, I think I could have gone out and done another. Like, no, I didn't think I'd make it the last mile, so I'm done for a while. I think that kind of plays into it a little bit too.
Yeah. It makes sense to me. Just not the version of you that you were years ago. So it was interesting for you to bring that up. And I can totally see it because I'm not an over racer by any means. I've raced less than most these past few years, but
it's why it didn't work for me.
What do you mean?
When I was racing every weekend, my results rarely got better.
Right.
I wasn't one of those people that did well with that. And even when I was racing back to back, even races where I had a couple stretches where I won weekends back to back or did well. There was one year we did a super championship, a sprint championship leading into the Beast Champion. And I won the super and took second in the sprint. But I spent that whole 2 weeks in between dreading the second race. I didn't win and get fired up like, oh, I can go to the second one. I spent the 2 weeks thinking, I don't know how I can get back up for that one. Mm-hmm. So even when I did well, it wasn't an enjoyable process. So I think that's part of the reason why racing for my living
didn't work out.
Part of it's talent. The other parts, mentally, it just didn't suit me.
Isn't it wild that back in college, we would race every weekend? In high school, we would race two. I remember a week or two every year, we'd have three meets in a week. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. You just go to the well all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. All the time. It's very different.
And I didn't do well with that.
Yeah.
Even then, I didn't. I'd get a couple good efforts a year, and the rest I had to, probably part of why I sat and kicked, because I didn't have it in me to go out and press the whole time. I wanted to shorten the amount of time I had to work for.
Well, we had talked about, before we started recording, it's like you leave races inspired to go home and train harder, or you could leave races inspired to go race more. But either way, like, I feel like I leave races inspired one way or the other. And right now it was like, oh, I went and raced a month ago and I was inspired to go do it again, because it was just something I've missed. And I often notice, like I'm a hard worker in my quality sessions. I think we all would label ourselves as such, I would imagine. But there's something about the effort a race brings out that accesses another level of push that then accesses, like, mm-hmm. You got a fitness bump. You bumped up from level 20 to level 21 just because you went out there and did the thing, and realizing that. If you do that every weekend, you'll get, you know, diminishing returns on that investment. But part of that's kind of fun to see. Like, I notice an uptick. If I go race back-to-back days, and I've said this to you before, 2 weeks later or so, I'm going to be like, where did this come from? And I kind of had a workout like that this weekend where I was like, this was easy, and I was running fast, and I can't really justify why it happened, but it probably has something to do with adaptation from race stimulus.
Yeah, you're a responder to big efforts. You really are. So what'd you do this weekend? What was your main mover workout?
I did 3 minutes on with a quarter mile float recovery by 10. I was actually trying to do thousands with quarter mile float recovery, but my watch wouldn't program to the 10th. I either had to go to 0.60 or 0.65, and it drove me nuts. And I was like, I don't want to do either of those. So I changed it to 3 minutes. So I did 3 minutes on with quarter mile float recovery. That's what I did.
And you didn't want to change to metric units on your system?
I guess I could have done that. Didn't even think about that. But yeah, I could have done that. I would have been smarter.
Then I spend the next week clicking off K's on my easy runs because I keep forgetting to turn it back. And you don't remember until you start the run and 4 minutes in it beeps. You're like, what?
Didn't even think about that. That makes me feel like a Neanderthal. That didn't even cross my mind, and I could have done that in a second.
Oh, no?
Stupid. But no, but all I'm just, you know, there's very few workouts now where I just actually rest. And so I did a float recovery type workout. My floats right now, like if I'm actually trying to allow myself recover, I'm realizing 6:30 pace is what I'm shooting for to rest. If I was doing a true float workout, I would probably tighten that gap. I was trying to run between around 5 minute pace for my hard efforts and then 6:30 for easy. But you know what's interesting about the float style, and I know you guys are probably sick of hearing about float style workouts, but what I would have done in the past is, let's say I had a prescribed jog recovery, I would have jog recovered between 7 or 7:30 pace typically. And then I would have got back to work, and then I would have jog recovered around 7:30 pace and do that song and dance. Well, now I'm recovering at 6:30 pace, and my top end metrics are just as good or even better than if I were recovering at that 7:30 pace. And it's interesting how it sneaks your fitness along. Like, my body has been able to not only put out the high end work with metrics I'm happy with, and even a little better, I can now do it with recovering at a much quicker effort. So it works. It absolutely works. And I'm just kind of hooked on that style now, having purpose to that. So that's what I did this weekend. It was a good push. I like 3 to 5 minutes.
I'm jumping in right now.
Okay. What?
I want to hear the rest of the workout, but I want to answer a question that people are asking at home right now, because I ask this when I used to listen to people talk about these float workouts.
Yeah.
And that question is, why not just work faster on the on and recover on the off? Because you don't get to take recoveries during the race either way. So you might as well just advance your fast metrics, because you don't get to jog during a race and you don't get to stand and rest. So neither are race specific. Why don't we just work faster? And I'm going to answer it right now.
Yeah, you answer it.
In the vast majority, I mean, there are other reasons. There are scientific reasons behind it. There are other things. I'm just going to stick to logic in race strategy. In the two types of races you're doing right now, or three types, trail, ultra, and OCR. The pace that you're able to recover at on intervals or on quality days, I believe is close to within the second of what you're reduced to when you crack or hit big sections of trails, ultras, or OCR.
I agree.
In an OCR race, when you come off something nasty and you have to recover for a bit as you're getting back to work, whatever your float pace is on intervals, I think that correlates to the worst you'll run on race day. And I'm sure you've had times in OCR where you're cracked off of a carry or a big climb.
For sure.
And you're going to run 7 to 7:30 for a bit before you get back to work. Now that's going to be 6:15 to 6:30 for you. Mm-hmm. That's the benefit. In an ultra, when you're running flats, once you get past 20 miles or so and you've got climbs, descents, and then you hit a flat section, whatever your float pace is in your workouts, I think correlates very specifically to what you can click back into on the flats and know that it's not going to be too much, that you can do another 20 or 30K of this type of effort interspersed in. And right now, I bet you could confidently say on trails, I could go 6:15 to 6:30 on flats anytime during a 50K or a 50 mile race with climbs in between.
For sure.
Where in the years past, that might be 7 to 7:30. So I think that's the correlation for our specific audience who does those.
It raises your floor.
Yeah.
It raises your floor.
And it's an actionable floor in race.
Right. Right. And when you raise your floor, you also have the opportunity then to raise your ceiling, because you're bringing the two closer together. And that's why it's powerful. And if I were racing a mile, or even if I were racing 5Ks on the track and it was a true focus of mine, there would be a purpose to over speed training. But how many of you listening are doing that? and I'm certainly not, right? Yes, do I want to run a fast 5K? Of course, but it's not my sole focus. Where yes, then I might really be aiming to hit higher pacing, which would require me to take more true recovery between reps. But it's not applicable to what we do nearly as much as I thought it was. And so yeah. We don't even need to continue on that. All I'm saying is float style workout this weekend. It was good. I mean, I averaged like 5:45 pace for 12 or 13 miles, and I got way more work out of my body, you know, because of it. And so I spent an hour at threshold in there, and I would have only spent in this workout 30 minutes in threshold if I had a different approach to my recovery. You tell me what your body's going to respond to more with physiological adaptation, an hour in threshold or 30 minutes. Well, I'm to the point where I can handle an hour at threshold, and that float style allowed me to do that. An interesting question, though, I've noticed. I don't know if you notice this, Bracken, and this is one I don't have an answer to, and maybe somebody smarter than us does, but I've been noticing that after recovery or rest periods, that when I begin my hard interval again, my heart rate still continues to drop for the first, like, 20 or 30 seconds before it rises again. So my heart rate will be coming down during recovery, coming down, and then when I start my hard rep, it continues to come down for, like, another, I don't know, 20 seconds before it reverses the curve and starts rising again. Have you ever experienced that?
No, mine, whatever I start the interval at, it'll like spool up at that. My energy, my effort spools up as that just kind of sits there like,
yeah,
winding. And then it starts creeping up. I don't see it drop for 20 or 30, maybe like 8 or 10 tops. And I always attribute that to my heart rate monitor leg. So there's always a little bit of a leg, but.
Yeah, mine's a little longer than a leg, and sometimes I figure that out. But what'd you train? What'd you do this weekend?
On Saturday, I did the workout I tried to do Wednesday and couldn't do. I was so I did 20-minute tempo, 15-minute row tempo, 10-minute tempo, 5-minute row tempo, 5-minute run tempo.
Spicy.
So I ran row, ran row, ran row, 20, 15, 10, 5, 5, and the running was at 20% incline.
Yeah, that sounds painful.
Two-ish minutes in between reps.
Uh-huh.
No, I stayed within myself. It was actually really nice as far as quality efforts go. But I tried it Wednesday, and I made it 8 minutes into the tempo, and it was just costing me too much, way too much. And so I just pulled the plug.
I can tell you weren't ready yet.
Yeah. And did some 60-60s and then finished up with a 3K on the row. Just, again, piecemealing the workout together to get it done. And then Saturday did the workout I intended for Wednesday and hit it just fine. It was night and day different.
It's a little continued hybrid focus here, Bracken. Is there any reason for that?
Yeah, because it's working.
That's a good reason.
I'd know that you might be digging for a new race on my calendar, but there's not currently. It's working. It's allowing me to continue to develop aerobically and anaerobically as my ability to handle running gets back to the range I'd like it to be in. So again, same kind of thing. I had 20-ish to 30 minutes of tempo running in me, but I got in, what is that, 50 minutes of actual threshold work, or just I was a little below threshold. I'd start each interval and like the one, like I'd get on the run and within 3 minutes would be to like 152 and I'd finish at 166.
Good workout.
And my lactate threshold's like 162 to 165, right in there, 62 to 66. So I'd start below and I'd wind up at the high range. And I couldn't get my heart rate up on the rower. I think it was still the shoveling was in me. My rear chain was having trouble pulling hard.
If I heard that from an athlete and they're like, I just couldn't get my workout going because I shoveled too hard, I'd be like, get out of here with the excuses. Shoveled too hard affecting your row. Continue. But I believe you. I really do. But yeah.
And maybe my heart rate just won't get up as much on the row because I did all pace-based row workout. This is the first time in months I wore the heart rate monitor for it. So maybe that's just I have different zones on the rower currently. But my first day, and I just talked about this on a call with an athlete, but my first day rowing for this whole rehab, my first day of doing threshold intervals on the row, I wanted to do 10 by 3 minutes at goal high rocks pace. So maybe not goal, sorry, not goal high rocks pace, current high rocks PR pace. So for me, that was That was like 159 per 500. Mm-hmm. You know, I did thousands at that. So 1,000 at that, what is that? What is that, 358?
Something like that.
Mm-hmm. 159 pace, 358 per 1,000. Mm-hmm. So 358 on, took 90 seconds recovery. I made it 5 rounds before my pace started to deteriorate and I was tipping over cardiovascularly. So I pulled the plug at 5. So I did 5 rounds, almost 20 minutes of work total, but I got 90 seconds of work in between. And I ended up averaging 201.6 per 500 that day. So now fast forward, what would that be? 12 weeks later or something like that, 9 weeks later. Mm-hmm. And I did a 20-minute tempo run at 20% incline, got off, got on the rower, and just rode at a comfortably hard pace for 15 minutes and averaged 156.
Oh, my goodness.
So just those 9 weeks of working on my form and on the ability to row, and I kept what cracked me in interval pace for almost the same duration with no rest and faster. Not impressive rowing stats, but to do that with my heart rate in an aerobic zone, what used to take over lactate threshold for me was just a very stark black and white, I have improved. It was a really nice way to start out that workout.
That's night and day difference. That's different planets.
Yeah, and then the next row, I was in the 40s the whole time because it was just a 5-minute row, but that wasn't even accessible to me 9 weeks ago. So it was a nice, and then to be able to hop back on and run, you know, at 20% in between those, it's just different places fitness wise. And the rower is interesting because it rewards form as much as it rewards engine. So you can very easily see yourself get better. So that was a workout I did this weekend and it was very encouraging. And it was just 3 days after having to quit the workout because I couldn't do the first rep.
Mm-hmm.
Shows what a race does to you.
Yeah, that can sit in neurologically, your nervous system can be shut down. I've noticed that. Like, you're like, oh my God, like, where is it today? When you go to hit a hard workout 3-4 days after a race, and you're like, this just, like, I'm working with a different engine today, and it's an engine that's been downgraded notably. It's like, what happened? It's just, I think it's nervous system fatigue is what it is, as much as anything.
When I got on there, I was running at 20% at 4 miles per hour. For what we'd want to be able to do when we're very fit, that's not excessively fast. It was supposed to be a tempo pace. Mm-hmm. And after 8 minutes, I had to stop because my hamstrings were so sluggish and weak and just burning. My quads were feeling full and I was gasping. And then 3 days later, so now it's a week after the race, 20 minutes after that, I didn't feel my hamstrings at all. And it was just very localized at the very front and bottom of my quads, the fatigue. And it wasn't even bad fatigue. And I was able to chat. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law came over during the last interval, and I held a conversation with them during it. Whereas prior to 3 days earlier, I was cracked 8 minutes in. So yeah, that systemic fatigue that follows you after a tough workout, it showed up in places that didn't even have any fatigue 3 days later, but it couldn't do the work after a race.
That's inconsiderate of your brother-in-law. I'd be real upset with him for that. I'd really lay the smack down.
It was the perfect time to come. I was all glistening with sweat, pumped up. Felt like a rock star.
The Hasselhoff look going. Yeah. I had a couple email check-ins with athletes. Then we should get into our episode today. But I had a couple email check-ins where people were just kind of feeling sluggish or gross on a workout or two this week. And I gave them the speech that I've given on here before, but it just reminds me of you kind of going and laying an egg and pulling the plug on Wednesday. It's like, after you do this long enough, you're like, you know what? It's okay. Move on. Listen to your body that day. Chalk it up as going to be all right. I said to two different people, I said, listen, if we have this conversation 2 or 3 weeks in a row, then we need to have a further discussion. But this is normal. Either your nervous system's shot, you have some cellular fatigue or structural damage. Like, don't read into a bad workout whatsoever. And I also outline, like, sometimes I got good sleep. I ate well. I drank plenty of water, and then I go and lay an egg, and I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. And then a week later, you can go and eat like shit, have 2 nights of bad sleep, and then the last thing you want to do is work out, and you put your shoes on and get into the workout, and it's there. And I was like, you know, I think we just stop trying to make so much sense of all this sometimes and just understand our bodies go through complex processes that we have a hard time understanding all the time. And the only time you should worry is when it's consistent through multiple weeks. And if it's not, just like you did, live to fight another day, right?
Yeah. But again, I checked another box in my I'm not the person I was, because that Wednesday when I fell apart in that workout, I finished it up doing something else.
Right.
And that was not what I did before.
Way to go.
And so it was a great, rewarding week, despite having the opportunity to have a disaster week. It turned into a rewarding week.
Well, I will not pry to see what your racing plans are, even though you're doing saturated hybrid work. We'll just move on from that, Bracken.
I can honestly tell you, I do not have a hybrid race on the calendar.
Okay. You have no races on your calendar.
But rowing seems to be translating to running for me right now a decently well. So I'm going to ride that out.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's a 33% chance I'll be in Phoenix, Arizona this weekend. There's a 33% chance I'll be in Jacksonville this weekend. And there's a 33% chance I'll be in Oak Grove, Minnesota at home this weekend. I'm comfortable saying that. How's that sound?
It sounds like there's almost a 70% chance you're leaving to race.
Gosh, I didn't think about it that way. Huh. Let's rephrase that. There's a 66% chance I will be at home, and there's a 33% chance I will either be in Jacksonville or Phoenix. I got to think these things through better. All right.
I thought you were like ready to pull the trigger already.
No, my plan is to look at – I'm going to see how much work I get done, and then I'm going to look at flights and everything on Wednesday night, and I'm going to make a decision in that moment when I do. So, okay. Half an hour of us jabbering. I'm sorry, guys. We asked – no, I know it.
I even enjoyed it listening to it.
When we first started the podcast, we're like, yeah, how much fluff should we start in the beginning of these episodes? And we keep it to like 2 to 3 minutes and then get to the point. And now we're at a half hour and that's just commonplace. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. Anyways, last episode or what, 2 episodes ago, we asked if you guys wanted to hear about a general outline of our running public OCR training plan and our running public running plan. Non-OCR running plan. And I got, I don't know, 30 messages saying, please do that. And that was enough. For everyone who wrote in, I'm sure another 2 thought about it. And so we're going to do that today. We're going to just not giving away the goods or the farm here, folks. You're not getting a free training plan by listening to us today. But we're going to give you a general idea of our thought processes behind each plan and what you can expect in the coming months or the layout of the year. Does that seem fair, Bracken? Are you up for that?
Very fair.
Okay, I'm glad you're on board. Why don't you do that? Let's start with whatever one really, you know, really fires you up the most, the OCR plan or the traditional run plan. Which one do you want to start with?
We're going to start with the running only plan because it's the new offering and it's newest to people. But first of all, the 20,000 foot view of both of these plans is that this is everything we talk about on the podcast in plan form. It's not everything haphazardly thrown together, but all the principles that we espouse on this podcast, everything we believe in, everything we discuss, things we've picked up from people that have been on the podcast, things that we've believed for decades, it's all rolled together into our best version of how to sustainably train for your sport. So whether it's OCR specific or just run specific, the plan is everything we believe in the best way that the masses can train for it without having to do big periodization or a ton of tweaking or personalization to the schedule. They're available for that. You can do that. You can take this plan and run with it, but it's designed as a constant build throughout the year. Always be at that 90 to 95% of capacity, able to race at the drop of a hat or able to sharpen up or get specific or rest up before something big. So this is everything we talk about with the purpose of getting a good place and slowly build and extend throughout the year.
Yeah, I'm glad you said all that to set this up because I would have jumped right into details and that would have left some people with questions. And then because you're giving an overview, we got a number of emails this past 2 weeks about I'm on the OCR plan and I want to switch over to the run only plan or not much vice versa, but nonetheless, if you are one of those listening or you're considering switching, All you need to do is go in the back end of your PayPal. There's a subscriptions tab. You cancel your OCR plan, and then you can just sign up for our run plan through our website. So you cancel it on the back end of your PayPal. Mm-hmm. Then you can just switch it manually that way.
I will say, there, for every one person that figures that out, there's someone else who says, I don't even have a PayPal. I don't understand how I even got this to work in the first place. I can't find the email. I don't know my login. Can you just do it? And in that case, yes. Just email us and say, I'm on the OCR plan. I'd like to just keep my payment coming out because they cost the same. Can I just be switched over? And yes, I can do that on the back end.
Cool.
So try it yourself first.
And then the strength plan. Should we address the strength plan to get that out of the way too?
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, you want to take the lead on that? Or should I give the overview as well?
Give the overview and then I'll play cleanup.
All right. The overview of this is that this is everything we talk about for strength training for OCR or for running on this podcast. It is one size fits all. The main set is always going to be good for both camps, OCR and runners. Nothing sports specific. It is just what you need to be able to do physically as an endurance athlete. And then it moves into a core routine. And then it moves into grip. So if you do not care about OCR, you just don't do the grip finisher. That's it. But the plan itself is only $5 a month. And so even if you only used one piece of those three portions, even if you used it just for the core alone or just the Metcons every Monday, you're not going to regret it. But yeah, it's one size fits all. Skip the grip if you don't care about OCR.
Yeah. Split into push and pull days, and both days involve the upper and lower bodies. Honestly, the same stuff that I'm doing basically right now on my own. We did just shift over to like a pseudo German volume training style of a 10 rep scheme, which I've been really enjoying. Seems to be building some really nice strength, endurance, and stay power. So, and yes, the plans are non-discrepant. So it's the same strength plan, whether you're on the OCR plan or the run plan. It's foundational strength work that we believe in. And it will be switched when we feel it is time for it to be switched. So you will be run through until we feel, and a lot of this stuff, like I said, we're our own guinea pigs, and our one-on-one coaching athletes are guinea pigs, and we realize when things run their course and it's time for new stimulus and things like that. So that's actually, it's not like we have a date on the calendar where we're like, oh, we're going to change the strength stimulus on April 1st. It's sort of like when it feels right. So that's, I'm sure some of you guys have noticed that who's on that plan, but just know that strength plan's a $5 add-on, and yes, it's the same for both OCR and running. Yeah. What other overview stuff?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that about when the plans change. Because sometimes we'll sit in a plan for 6 weeks and sometimes we'll sit in it for like 10 weeks. Mm. We'll hit the same ones over. And oftentimes it's because during that time, like, have we gotten the most out of the plan we need to by week 6 or 7? Maybe. But we may have 3 or 4 big volume or big workouts on the weekends coming up that are main movers for our cardiac, our endurance development. And so we don't want to switch to a new strength training plan and add new stimulus in as we're raising the bar up cardiovascularly. So yeah, it's always going to be the piece that is adjusted to fit the running rather than vice versa.
Yep. 100%. Okay. Should we dive into the run plan then?
Let's do that. So when we listed out what we wanted to do here, we basically talked about we need to have hill work, we need to have threshold work, and we need to have some sort of mechanical speed work. On top of that, we need long efforts.
Yep.
So those were the four things that really scripted out, or not scripted out, but those were our four main pillars of what we wanted to do here. And that shouldn't really be a shocker to anyone, because hill workouts, threshold development, mechanical speed work, and long runs are really what we spend the vast majority of our training Tuesdays talking about, other than compromised running. And so that's what the plan's built off of. So with that, we basically have, let's see here, we have our Tuesdays, training Tuesdays, keep it simple. Easy work Monday, training Tuesday is our first quality session, and we have some sort of interval or fartlek work. So for example, week one was 3 by 10 minutes of threshold intervals. Week two was 16 to 20 by 400 meters, and that was closer to 10K pace. So it's still mostly in the threshold realm, but we're alternating between long sustained threshold work and shorter interval bouts where we're working a little quicker. Those are paired with our Thursday work. Wednesday is always recovery. Thursday alternates between speed sprinkles and midweek long runs. And then Friday is always easy. Saturday is another main mover quality set. We started with our 3-2-1 uphill workout and then a 5-5 long run. So we're getting long runs, we're getting quality long efforts in, we're getting hill work, we are getting threshold work, and we're getting mechanical speed work in. It's the kind of thing that's very sustainable. We have two main workouts per week. We have a secondary midweek long run that might have some short little speed sprinkles in, but we're not trying to cram three workouts in per week because this is a year-long training progression. We want to never be lower than 90% of effectiveness, never want to be up over 95 unless we really intentionally have a race coming up that we want to sharpen for. We want sustainability and long-term growth and development on this plan. So that's the outline of how we're progressing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're big believers in that quality long run too over the weekends. And you'll find this on the OCR plan as well. But I don't think there's a single-handed bigger mover of my fitness than the quality long run in recent years, because there's no real end cap. Like on a Tuesday, that workout's going to be very purposeful, but there's like, you know, time restraints with work in the morning or after work. And, or there's, it feels like there's, you know, the volume, the ability to get in volume of quality on a Tuesday, is a little shorter than your availability, what we assume on a Saturday when maybe you don't have to work and you have a little more time. So it allows you to extend out the time you spent of purposeful work. And so it takes like a Tuesday workout and it kind of puts it on steroids a little bit for Saturday. And it's those big hammer swings that I think move the fitness. And so we got a lot of that stuff programmed coming up. I think we've scripted out, how many weeks did we get ahead on this thing, Bracken? We're scripted out through the entire spring, I think.
We have the framework for the year and we have specific workout progressions through May 7th.
Yep, through May 7th. And so you brought up, you know, I think some of you listening are going to say, okay, what are we doing in March? And then what are we doing in April? And then how's it going to progress to May? And then what can I expect in June? And what you can expect is a gradual opportunity to increase volume, increase the volume at which you spend intensity. We're building fitness by adding duration to our interval sessions, duration to our threshold works. What we're trying to do is we're trying to keep the reins on your fitness. So one, you don't burn out and corner yourself in April and be like, now what? We're trying to take a tenured and sustainable approach to your fitness, which means you could hop in a race whenever you want to. You could deload if you want to or need to. But what we don't want is we don't want to end up having you completely fried by throwing you VO2 max work every single week for 4 weeks. And then you're stuck in a corner with your fitness with nowhere to go. We're trying to develop you as like a human athlete who's going to continually get better, not only throughout this year, but then be able to do it again next year and the following year and climb the ladder to progression. And so we're giving you very purposeful work without trapping you into peaking too early, too soon, or for something you're not even trying to peak for because your A race isn't on the schedule till fall. And so we're very purposeful with giving you the work to help you get fit, but not burning the candle too hot to the point where there's going to be nowhere to turn in 2 months. We're practicing self-restraint and control in the progression so that you can have great races all year long without ever feeling the need to like, this is, I just don't want it anymore. That's kind of the goal. Would you agree with that, Bracken?
100%. Rylan Shattuck just made a post about how he scripts his season. If you haven't read it, go read it on Instagram. He made this specific point that he has to keep some intensity early in the year, but he's very careful not to do too much of it. Because one, he doesn't want to get too fit too soon and have nowhere to go, like you said. But the other point that he made, which I don't feel like we've talked about enough on here, is that, and it's a very good point, is that the more you do super sharp anaerobic work now, the less you will respond to that stimulus later. You're going to get a boost from it whenever you do it. If you do 4 to 6 weeks of VO2 or fast VO2 max or faster work, you're going to get fit. And then it starts tailing off. Whereas you can do lactate threshold work year round and continually improve. So you kind of want to save it for when you want to really move your fitness needle. Mm-hmm. So if you want to do it now, that's fine. But then you have to get away from it and stay away from it for a bit so that you can have another noticeable jump when you want to peak later. And it was a really good point that he made, that the more you do now, the less it's going to move the needle for you later. And you want big jumps in fitness right before you need them, not months before. And then best case, I can just hang on to it a little bit before then. So
yeah.
I really like that he posted about that.
Yeah, I didn't read that. I'm going to go read that. I was going to bring up another point, and then you brought that story up.
While you think about it, I want to follow up to one of your points. You were talking about duration.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
One of our other goals for this is that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, anyone other than people prepping for like marathons or ultras, pretty much everyone on the plan can get their warm-up to cool down done in 70 minutes or less.
Yeah.
Ideally, it'd be an hour or less time buy-in to buy-out every day. So we're doing threshold intervals, or we're doing interval work, or we're doing easy runs, but you have the opportunity to go longer than that if you need to, but you can get the workout done in about an hour or less on your Tuesdays, because most people can fit 50 to 60 minutes of work in, but most people can't fit 70 to 90 minutes in the morning before work or on their lunch break. So that was a big piece with this program as well, is make it accessible on a daily basis. Saturdays, we are going bigger. Thursdays, every other Thursday, there's the opportunity for a slightly longer run. And you can move that to whatever day of the week works for you schedule-wise. But most often, we wanted you to be able to be done in an hour or less.
Yeah, and that's what I mentioned about being able to even swing harder on Saturdays, because we're trying to stay within the confinements of time during the week. However, that doesn't mean we do have tiers, what, 1, 2, 3, and 4, meaning like if you're training for the 5K, you can pick the lower volume option. And if you're training for up to the marathon or ultra, which would be like a level 4, you can pick the higher rep scheme or the higher volume. So there's some freedom to choose here. Now, when I said we're trying to make sure you're race ready without burning yourself out, we're trying to make this sustainable so you can progress not only month to month, but year to year. Really mean that. I know that might seem like a throwaway thing to say, because yeah, of course that sounds great. I'm going to improve every year. Like, what a fluffy thing to say, but like, we genuinely mean that. At the same time, I don't want to insinuate that this is easy, because a lot of people hop on our training plans and go, oh my God, this is way, like, now I understand what it's like to actually train. I thought I was training before, and now I see your plan and I'm on it. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I was being lazy. I was cutting corners. I was not doing the right work. Like, this is a plan that you need to take seriously and you want to get better doing. Like, Bracken just said our first workout was 16 by 400 meters. When's the last time one of you listening even considered doing 16 by 400 meters? So I don't want to make the plan sound fluffy, because this is for people who are taking their fitness seriously and really want to better themselves. And this is like a legit plan. So because we're holding back in quotes, not trying to peak you at any one time early, does not mean that it's going to slow your progression down, your ability to get better. Like, we're throwing some big time workouts that challenge the best of us that we do ourselves. So I just want to make sure that was said. I don't want the impression that like we're giving you easy stuff because we're trying to hold back. That is not the case. What we're doing is we're not trying to corner you into a false peak early, which almost everybody does on accident if you're just willy-nilly throwing workouts at the wall and doing them. So that was more the point I was trying to get across.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. You're going to get out of this plan what you want. The plan is accessible for almost everyone. If you are able to run, or you're not, if you're able to ride a bike or anything, you can substitute any of these to any day. Yep. So if you can't run 16 by 400, well, you jog it. Or you work really hard on the assault bike for those 90 seconds rather than running a 400. But it's accessible to everyone. It's not complicated. The workouts are now all programmed that if you want them to populate in your watch on Garmin Connect or however you do it, it will pop up and it'll work seamlessly. Should. We haven't had a complaint yet. They should all be populating. Every interval will beep and tell you what to do. Moderately fast run or 8 out of 10 effort run. Now it'll beep and say jog, rest, recovery pace, 90 seconds. However it appears, it is pretty simple to follow. They're not insanely complicated workouts, but a pro level runner could get what they want out of this, because there's extended runs after the workouts for people looking to run ultras or marathons. The pace scales to use. So it's accessible, but it's progressive and is every bit as challenging as you want to make it. So no one should feel like I can't handle this program, and no one should feel like it's too basic for me. Kirk and I both said this last time, and we said this while we were building this. If we just followed this all season long, we'd be just fine.
We'd be monsters. We wouldn't be just fine. We'd be monsters. It just gives you the opportunity to level up if you want to. And if you're not ready to level up, then you can choose the more approachable option for you for each workout. I mean, we give you the opportunity to work up to 40 minutes of threshold work in intervals by the time our first build is done. That is a substantial amount of time and threshold, you know, working hard, sustained effort. So, okay. And then let's give like a general overview of the year then, so people can understand what they can expect. Like, where are we going to be at in the summer? Where are we going to be at in the fall? Where are we going to be at towards the end of the year? Like, do you have a way you can summarize that to help everybody understand the direction and what they can expect?
So we build out until the progression is no longer sustainable. So if you go from 3x10, now this isn't the exact progression, but I'm going to give an example. Mm-hmm. If you go from 3x10 minute tempo to all the way up to 4x10 or 5x10, and then reset to 15 minute and then 3x20 eventually, like, you can't go much more than that.
Correct.
And when we start with 16x400 and move up to, let's say, 24x400, then you move them to 800s and 1000s. You progress each interval workout and each threshold workout up until its sustainable endpoint. When that happens, you can't turn a 60-minute tempo into a two-hour tempo at the same pace, because that's not realistic. So that's at the point where we take a deload and we reset the progression. And then you work back through with, in theory, slightly better fitness, slightly faster paces, and there's been time trialing. What do we have in here, Kirk? Every 6 weeks?
6 weeks, I think we're time trialing. We're giving you the opportunity to tackle a time trial of your choice, whatever either feels right or suits your upcoming races best. Yes, every 6 weeks.
Every seventh week is time trialing. And so there is a short and a medium option on week one of time trialing on the Tuesday. And then on Saturday, there is a medium and a long option. So if you're like a 10K or under specialist, you do the two shorter versions. And if you're training marathon or ultra, you do the longer versions. Or maybe you just want the longer, because like me, you have to work the longer ones to get good at the shorter. But you have at least two options for time trials on each testing period. And we have at least 8 different time trial options throughout every 14 work, technically a 14-week macro cycle, broken into 7-week micros. So we retest throughout. And we will take a full 14 weeks to get through a macro cycle, with the option to extend it 7 more on top of that. And then we reset and start a little shorter with our interval duration. And the pace now is based off your time trialing. You will reset your paces and rebuild up with your faster, more, you know, more fit version of you. So you're looking at anywhere from 14 to 21 weeks before the progression resets and advances.
Yeah. And that's where I find the big bumps in fitness come, is you'll go through and we'll hit this big progression of, let's say, 14 weeks, which I know can feel like a long time, but let's just say that's what it is. And then you sort of, we take a deload week or two, you time trial, and then you go back and start with like a fresh set of workouts. And all of a sudden you notice, like, how am I running these paces now? Where did this come from? After a cycle, a bit of a deload, and then returning to a new cycle. We just, you know, it's like, it's your sophomore year, you're going to be better than your freshman year? Probably. And it's kind of the way it works with training cycles too. Those bumps sort of happen, you know, amidst the build it can happen, but I notice those big jumps happen after the stimulus is switched, after a little bit of a deload. And then something like, I know we're talking like, oh, this perfectly built plan, like you almost feel like you need to jump in day one, otherwise what's the point? That is not the case, of course, with this either. It's not like if you weren't here at the founder's week of week one that you're jumping, you can't jump in if we're 2 months in, 3 months in, 6 months in. None of that. They can be scaled. That's how this works. It's going to be perfectly purposeful for you if you jump in mid-plan. You don't need to be mm-hmm. on it from day one. Again, because it's what I advise you to jump in if we were doing these really sharpening, like, 200 meter repeat workouts and we're trying to get you fast at the mile or the five, like the mile, I'll be like, no, like probably wait until the next cycle starts. But because this is sustainable, you can hop in at any time if you are listening. I mean, soon would be great. I think it'd set you up nicely for even spring racing coming mm-hmm. up. But if you're not ready, that's totally fine.
And even things like the long runs, they're not progressive in nature that we say we're going 90 minutes this week and 100 minutes next week. And by, mm-hmm. you know, week 11, we're at 180 minutes and you're going to have to jump into 180 minutes no matter what. Mm-hmm. No, it says long. Let's say it's a long cut down. Well, the last 40% of your run is going to be the cut down. And there's a prescribed duration based off of, are you choosing level 1, 2, 3, and 4? Early on, level 1 long runs are 45 to 60 minutes.
Yep.
And a long run for you might be 45 minutes. That might even have to be broken up into walk rests. That's fine. Level 4 gives you opportunity to start at let's say 120 minutes and move up to 180. That's a 2 to 3 hour long run, but only people who belong in level four would even choose level four as the option. So you can jump in anytime and it's scalable. Worst case is you jump in on last week of our 21 week block. You get 1 week of work. You're going to time trial and then you start in fresh with the next block anyway. And since it's resetting for everyone, it's resetting to whatever your current level of fitness is. So there is no wrong time to join. It's going to sound like one big long sales pitch, but this is more of just speaking to the people who are already interested.
Yeah, already on the plan. And we make notes. Bracken does the notes on the back end. And for example, like, well, okay, I have a race this weekend. How would that affect my quality workout? Like, what, obviously I shouldn't be training fully the week of a race. How are you guys going to know that I have a race coming up, or how can I? Well, we make a note. If you're racing this week, scale this workout back. Like, Bracken is really good about putting in subheadings or subnotes in the prescribed workouts, and that means reduce volume. If it's race week or you're fatigued or something's coming up, like, you will have the guidance there to scale what we are doing. And typically that'll be in notes in there as well. So you'll have, like, of course it's not a customized approach to you specifically because we don't know your race schedule, but it will give you the guidance to make the right decision on your own.
Well, and for $19, you can't get customized.
Well, exactly. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm not in, yeah, exactly. But so just know that that is taken into consideration. So you won't really have to ask that question. It should be there for you already so that you can make that decision on your own. If that makes sense. And then the other thing that we didn't really hone in on yet is trail, road, mountains. This scales to everything. So we believe in stimulus and training metabolic systems. And that means if you're training for mountain races or you're training for a road marathon, if you're training for a freaking 100K, Black Canyon just happened, for example, you can choose the terrain in which makes sense for your desired race. So it's not like we're just like, oh, go to the roads. That's not what's happening at all in this. You got to put a little bit of the decision-making on your shoulders to understand what terrain is best for the races you have coming up. And we give you the autonomy to make that decision as well. So all those are indicated in the plan.
And well, there's language in there. It'll say, we typically do this workout on a treadmill so that we can control our incline. However, if you have a mountain or trail race coming up, get out on race terrain and do this one there.
Yep.
Very often in these early months, the hill workouts are designed that they can be completed on a treadmill because half of the country doesn't have access to their hills right now. And 25% of the rest of the country doesn't even have hills. So it's scripted so that you can do it on a treadmill, but there's an easy way to do it outside if needed.
Yep.
Again, for $19, there's not a more all-encompassing, well-thought-out plan than this. I just don't think it can exist.
No, we checked every box. We thought of everything that crossed our own brains in regards to questions, scenarios, race calendars. I mean, we put in more treadmill work because it's winter right now and a lot of people don't have mountains like you had mentioned. But with the note that if you're one of those people who live in the Southwest and have access to dry mountains that you can get out on, this would be a very effective workout to do on real terrain. So, and we'll flow with the seasons with that as well. But I think some people want like a, you know, like that nice linear understanding of the year. And I think if you can wrap your head around the fact that you are going to feel and be race ready, generally working the correct energy systems for racing 5K to and above, and then deloading when appropriate into the races that matter for you, you should show up as ready to race as you ever have been. And so because everybody is pursuing such different races that would be on this plan, and that's the great thing about the running public, is we have road 5Kers and we have ultra marathoners who run in the mountains and we have everything in between. It's flexible in the sense that you will have you make the decision on when you taper in and how to scale the workouts to do it. So it's not one glorious peak in June and then we reset and then we peak again in November. That wouldn't fit for everybody. So if you're looking for that kind of timeline, that's not what this is, but this is a race ready program where you build in your own tapers. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. So you understand, like, it's not a month to month situation. It's like, again, sustainable, which is the word I've thrown around a lot. So wanted to make sure that was understood.
Yeah, it will flow and progress throughout the entire season and it will lead right into the next season.
Yeah.
Ready for the OCR version?
Yes, sir. Kick us off.
This will be more brief because it's everything we just said, but with an OCR emphasis. And what that doesn't mean is we take those exact same workouts we did and put burpees before the intervals. That's not it. There may be a workout or two where that is it when it's appropriate. For example, 16 to 20 by 400 might turn into OCR 400s at some point where burpees are one of the movements you do prior to a 400. But they are not the same workout, not done at the same intensity. This plan follows the same intensity scales. Speed sprinkles, lactate threshold development, aerobic development, long runs, quality long runs, and hill workouts. But they are done so that every week has at least one workout that moves the needle from a compromised running standpoint. And it's tricky because still the single best thing you can do for OCR is develop your running. And so we must have standalone running development. But in this plan, we also use more hill workouts and 100% more OCR. Well, maybe 100% more OCR work isn't accurate because 100% of zero is still zero.
Yeah.
But it has at least one specific OCR quality session per week. And so the flow of that looks like on week one, the intervals might be the compromised runs. And your midweek long run is a speed sprinkle. And on Saturday is a hill workout. And then the next week, it's a standalone interval session on Tuesday. And then your Thursday is an OCR medium long effort. And Saturday is a quality long run. And then the third week, you might get a threshold run Tuesday, a speed sprinkle or midweek long run Thursday, and then Saturday is a big mover OCR hill workout. So each week won't look exactly the same, but each week has at least one quality effort that is OCR specific. And oftentimes the run intervals will overlap with some other run plan, and other times where it's not appropriate, they will be different workouts because they need to be done on a trail or they need to be done on a hill because there is more hill emphasis in our sport right now. So that's the general overview of how this plan works. All the same things we talked about with the run plan, but specifically for OCR. And this was built alone, and then the run plan was built, and then wherever possible, we will make the workouts similar, but they're not just the same workouts copied and pasted over with OCR work. That is not how this plan works.
Yeah, well, you've laid that out real nicely. We had one of my favorite workouts that I you know, was prescribed by Bracken way back in the day in 2017 when we had worked together. It was KDE, which is still one of my favorites to date. We don't need to get into the story as to why it's called KDE. That's for another time, but
we never will.
Curious minds want to know, but it's 2 minutes of a drag or a carry or some sort of fatiguing movement into 5 minutes of hard threshold running and with a short 2 minute recovery typically. And I love that one a week out for a race. And isn't it coincidental that it was a week before Jacksonville? Who would have thought that we'd, you know, make it work that way, but we did. Anyways, so things like that you will see. There's a general sentiment of following OCR's tendency to have shorter-ish races matter early in the year and the longer-ish races matter later in the year. So you will see a progression that way, like allowing you to run faster, sharper, stingier, compromised efforts early, maybe focusing a little bit more on the grindy efforts later. You're going to be ready to race both, but we will follow that general nature. Last year, we followed the age group national series, I think, to a T, didn't we, Bracken? We actually either deloaded.
Yeah, it was scripted for that.
This is not the case, but it's this year, but it's so closely, it's so closely going to follow the spirit of the season that you will be ready for all the races appropriately when they come through. Is that a fair way to put it, would you say?
It is, and the decision was made that by following the U.S. National Series last year, it was perfect for some people and alienated others.
We had a lot of questions about that.
Yeah, by not following it this year, we've decided to make sure that it follows the flow of the sport for the year. And it may not be perfect for anyone, but it's not going to be a constant hassle for anyone as well. So you are always going to have compromise running. You're always going to have speed work. You're always going to have threshold development. You're always going to have long runs. You're always going to have hill workouts. And it will be much easier to every time you have a race, understand my protocols to do this, rather than say some of the races align, some of them don't. Sometimes we're time trialing on the U.S. National Series race, but it never correlates with what I need to do with my schedule. Right. Now it's just going to be one size fits all, and we can all modify it slightly rather than some people love it and some people hate it.
Yeah.
That might not be the best way of describing it, but that's why we did it.
Yep. As far as OCR specific people go, it seems like the OCR humans are a little more concerned about their strength work and if I'm generalizing, than the runners, because strength is such a integral part of OCR. You got to buy the separate strength plan for $5. If you want the strength stuff, as we already mentioned, and then the grip work is not in the OCR plan standalone. Like, the grip work would be accompanying the strength plan, as well as the Monday Metcons. That's all part of the strength plan. So if you're an OCR athlete and you want the grip prescriptions or the grip finishers or the Metcons, because maybe you're a hybrid racer and those Metcons are helpful for that, for example, this plan can still work for you. And so, but you will need the $5 strength add-on to get the grip finishers, the core work, the strength, and then the Monday Metcon. So, not that it's not applicable for the traditional runners, because it is, but I know the OCR athletes are wondering that, and that is separate. So wanted to make sure that got out there.
Yeah. So the compromised run workouts will have grip components at times, but you will not have your weekly two to three times a week grip work scheduled into there. This is the aerobic and anaerobic versions of OCR right here, not the strength work. The reason why we alternate how it looks throughout the week of what sessions are compromised is so that you have some speed, short, fast sessions compromised, you have some threshold stuff compromised, and you have some long and hill work compromised, so that at any point you're well-rounded to race any duration. However, you always have the ability to make sure that if you are 4 weeks out of a race that really matters, you're just going to start making all your Tuesday workouts compromised. Very easy to do. And we also have, this is important to note, we have a Facebook group for the Running Public Training Plan. And this plan is not designed for you guys to interact with us. That's what our personal coaching is for. We just, for $19 a month, we cannot afford to give you our actual face-to-face time. So it's not like, yeah, just email us whenever you need questions and we're going to answer it right away, because you will get your answer after all of our athletes are dealt with, if you get an answer. However, we have the Facebook group for the running public where the answers are crowdsourced, and Kirk and I monitor it. And if the answer doesn't get crowdsourced, then we jump on there and we answer the question. So you still do have access to us. You know, we prefer you don't abuse it, but we're also not just going to let the questions go totally unanswered either. Unless you email me, in which
it gets unanswered.
Probably get unanswered. Yeah,
I got a few dozen that sneak into my IG DMs asking, that are on our plan, asking me questions. I don't mind from time to time. But if you are in the Running Public Training Plan, request to be in the Facebook Running Public group. That would be helpful in that regard. Everybody's pretty good about answering other people's questions in there too, which I like seeing. Something that we got asked the other week about this, which we just are like so duh about. This is a month-to-month thing, and it can be canceled at any time. You're not committed for a year. You're not committed for any length of time. Like, we never really covered that for some reason. And somebody's like, I don't know how long I'm getting into this for. Like, can you tell me? It's like, oh, it's month-to-month. We just assumed everybody knew that. No, you can cancel at any time in the back end. So it's just month-to-month. There's no commitment. You get on it. You love it. Great. Stay put. You get on it, and you're like, I don't know about this. It's not for me. Maybe I need one-on-one coaching, or I'm just giving up altogether. Then you can just cancel it whenever you'd like. So it's that simple.
Mm-hmm. And the last question I want to answer is, someone asked, you have Tuesday, Saturday is your big main mover quality workouts, and Wednesday, Sunday is what works for me. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, I can see that's a hassle, and we are not going to go in there and change that. Again, this is priced like Netflix. That's just not the service you're paying for, but it's very modular. The pattern is, you work hard, you take a recovery day. That's how it works. And so everything can be shifted very easily. Yep. You don't have access to a hill on Tuesday, but you will Saturday. You can just swap the workouts. It follows a recovery easy day pattern, and that's what you do.
Yeah. Feel free to modify it with your schedule. Heck, I have, I would say, half a dozen of my one-on-one athletes they got schedules that change every week based on work. I don't even know where they are, what they're doing, but it's like, okay, I trust you to navigate the work I've given to you appropriately and make it work with your travel for work schedule, whatever. And we do that even in a one-on-one sense. And so you can do that as well very easily. Get the stimulus in, make sure you recover in between, and you'll be just fine. It's better than skipping it all together or pushing it all to the end of the week. And that just doesn't work as well either. So, yeah, I'm glad you said that. I'm trying to think if we're missing anything else in regards to the plans. I would say if you're on the fence, try it. Try it. See how you like it. I don't see it being terribly harmful to give a crack at it, especially if you're having a hard time making training decisions right now. Or if you're somebody who's like, I don't really know my race schedule yet, so why would I hop on a purposeful plan? I think it's the exact right time. Typically, getting into a training groove and really buckling up can feel momentum and help you make decisions down the road. And so, I don't know. I think it's a kick butt plan that I would pay for, and I would really probably see some good fitness bumps off of both of them.
I had a conversation with someone at High Rocks in Chicago 2 weekends ago who said, I'm on your plan. You probably don't know me because we don't interact ever. I never interact in the Facebook group. I don't interact on Instagram. I just screenshot the quality workouts every week. I write my own training plan. I just have your plan for workout ideas. Mm-hmm. I want to see how you guys are progressing your workouts. And I know I want to do threshold stuff on Saturdays or long runs. And I know I want to do compromise on Tuesday. So I just take a screenshot every week when you post the workouts. And then that's my workout bank. And that's what I use it for. Said, fantastic.
What do it?
Do what you got to do with this plan.
When we, you don't know this actually. It's funny you said that, but when we, when I was coaching under you, I think it stopped in 2017, and then we kind of, consulted with each other in 2018. You know, we became buddies then, and it shifted. But in the very tail end of the leaderboard days, that's exactly what I would do. As I was sort of developing, like what I thought made sense for me, and also combining what I was taught from you. I did the exact same thing. I screenshot the workouts. I had a bank of them. Mm. Half the time I followed the script on the day it was given. And then half the time I'm like, I think I'm going to try this thing that I want to do today instead. And I developed a big cache of workouts exactly like that. So it's not the worst approach, to be honest. Yeah.
It's no different than me buying Jack Daniel's training book in 2009 and reading it and then reading through all his templates at the end. And saying, I really like his interval progressions. I cannot stand his long run style. I like the way he does some of his tempo work, but some of this seems really aggressive. And just starting my own workout queue based off of his book. That's why he put his book out there.
Mm-hmm. You know, so not a lot of athletes have this perspective. And I'm going to give you a little plug, Bracken, obviously to benefit us and the listeners at the same time as well. But when I first... You know, now obviously I'm a full-time coach and this is my life, but it wasn't always the case. And when I was coaching under Bracken as a new OCR athlete, this is 6-7 years ago now, I saw what I was given as an athlete. We were paying, I was on a middle tier program. I was paying $100 a month, $99.99, I think it was, Bracken. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, we're giving you more. We're giving you more for $19.99 than I was getting back then for $100 a month. Minus the fact that I would have a call with Bracken every quarter, I think it was, for that cost. And there was some interaction on the back end. There was some interaction. We could ask questions. So I had access to you as well. But we're giving you more. And I know because I was an athlete.
This training is better. Yeah.
Yeah, it's better. Yeah. I was paying $100 a month for that programming. And this is exponentially more, not exponentially, but it's exponentially better value and it's more thorough. And so I had that perspective because I was you paying for a coach back in the day and buying a service just like you listening are considering or already doing. And so I have the comparative directly because I was on both programs and now we wrote this one together. And so I don't know how you're going to find anything that's more reasonable, to be honest, for everything that's on it. And we don't shamelessly plug ourselves very often. It feels a little icky to be doing this, to be honest, now that I sound, yeah. I feel like I sound like an infomercial, but we're going to drop it after this. I just think it's, we work really hard for you guys and we put out the episodes and we're very proud of the community and the support and we want you guys to be a part of it. And that's why I think we want you to be on this, you know, this plan with us, and then we'll move on with our normal content after this. But yeah. I don't know. You got anything else?
Well, this is the thing here that allows us not to monetize the podcast.
Correct.
That's not a guilt trip. That's just a statement of fact. Mm-hmm. These plans here let us put the podcast out as a passion project. And so this is our way of doing that. And I found this process of creating this plan with you fun, because this was the same way that I sat down and made that very first leaderboard plan, trying to come up with a ready to race plan for running or for OCR or for a specific style of OCR and build it out. And now 7 years later, with seven more years of experience, we sat down and I got to build it with you. Someone who signed up to buy the first one mm-hmm. now sat down with me collaboratively and made a better plan than we made back then. So it's kind of like a full circle moment for me, mm-hmm. realizing how far I've come as a coach, I believe, in 7 years with all the trial and error that I've had. And then also seeing someone that originally paid for a plan from me is now here giving me workouts and giving me advice. In our conversation where we sat down and chatted and we had some Zoom calls where we went over this, and you'd say something, I'd be like, oh, that's way better. We said that to each other several times.
A couple times,
like, yeah. No, screw that. I like yours way better. Let's do that. Uh-huh. That phrase just kept tossing back and forth. And I'm thinking, man, this guy paid me for training. I know I'm sitting here telling him, oh, that's way better. Let's do that.
So that's funny.
It was a cool, it was just like that perfect little coaching moment where you're both sitting there like, we both got better. What more uh-huh. can you ask for than that?
That's true. That was said a lot in our conversations.
But it also sheds light on the things that we were putting out into the world early in our coaching days that you think, I hadn't gone through enough of my trials yet, because some of that really could have been improved. But that's always hindsight, right?
We'll look back in 5 years and I'm sure we'll say the same about what we're putting out now. But I think there will be a smaller discrepancy. Yeah. So, okay. Oh, do you feel a little icky? We're done. We're done pushing it. Hopefully you got the answers you need, guys.
Burn this shirt. These are the pit sweats of shame.
Let me see them. Raise up the hands. Hold on. Now I got to see. This is how you know we're getting uncomfortable. Hold on. Do I have pit stains?
Do you think I always have a bigger stain on my right side than my left? What do you think that is?
Do you lean?
Is that a cardiovascular thing with how your blood pumps in your body?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Or is it just my dominant arm?
I thought I'd have sweaty pits that I could show off as well, but I don't. So I guess you got a little more uncomfortable than I did in this conversation.
Yeah, you've got a reality TV background. You're comfortable being slimy.
Yeah, it's true. All right. Well, maybe you'll see some of you this weekend, and maybe I won't. And we're going to leave it at that. And Bracken won't see any of you guys.
There is a somewhere between 33% and 66% chance that Kirk's going to be somewhere this weekend.
Well, there's 100% chance I'll be somewhere this weekend. I just could be right here in this chair again. I don't know. All right. If you have any specific follow-up questions, you can shoot them over to us. Do you think it's easier for people to message the running public account or us directly? Which one do you think is better these days, Bracken? If they have specific questions,
I think you message the running public account if it is the type of response that you are comfortable being delivered with our thumbs. Mm. If it is a bigger question, you should probably email both of us on the same email. That way, Kirk will see it and he'll remind me about it.
That is what happens once in a while. Not all the time, though. Okay.
I'm working. I'm trying.
We're both working on it.
See you Friday.
All right. That's it. We're cutting it. See you later.